You're listening to Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Screen Heroes, your film and TV podcast on the Heroes Podcast Network. I am your host, Derek, and I have with me my two lovely co-hosts, Ryan.
Hi.
And Ray.
What's up?
How are you guys doing tonight?
Oh, I am looking forward to this podcast very much.
Well, good. I'm glad because we're going to do it. This is happening. Ryan, how are you, Ryan?
I am just wonderful. Thank you.
Just wonderful. That's good. Very nice. Well, this week we are taking a look back at 15 years of Sky High, the live action superhero comedy film. That is from 2005. Originally, we were going to do this next week because that's closer to its actual anniversary. But due to the passing of Kelly Preston, who stars in the film, we decided to move this up. It would be a little more timely and appropriate this week. So if you are expecting our 30th anniversary review of Dick Tracy, that will be next week instead. So catch us for that. We're going to go ahead and talk some news. So let's do this. Let's talk news. Let's begin with Star Wars. Let's get the Star Wars news out of the way. This week, Disney and Lucasfilm announced a new animated Star Wars series called Star Wars The Bad Batch, which will follow a group of special...
I thought it was The Bad Bitch.
Could have had a bad bitch, non-committal, anymore, and you have to pay rights.
Ryan, I think you're confusing it with the title everybody wants it to have.
Oh, Gotcha. Yeah, that happens.
Easy mistake. I think people are just reading it that way at this point. But the Bad Batch is a group of special clone troopers from the final season of the Clone Wars, and this show will apparently follow that group specifically in the wake of everything that goes on in the Clone Wars. I'm not a Clone Wars expert, so I'm not going to dive too deep into that, but it is slated for a 2021 release on Disney Plus. Guys, thoughts, concerns, musings?
I don't know at all who the Bad Batch are, but everybody seems excited about this, and the cartoons have been pretty good for a long time. So I am, you know, cool with it.
Yeah, I didn't watch the Clone Wars, so, you know, I don't know. But from what I heard, they were Bad Batch was really crammed in there. Probably specifically because they knew they were going to make a show about it, so it's just kind of shoehorned in. But I'm excited. I've wanted to get into the Star Wars animation, but the animation style just threw me off on Rebels and on Clone Wars, so hopefully this one is a little bit different, something that I can get into a little bit easier.
Yeah, that's fair. It's not the Ahsoka show that I think a lot of people were hoping to hear about, and that doesn't mean that won't happen. This just means this was the next thing in the pipe. And I think you're right, Ryan. I think this was probably planned from early on in season 7's development for the Clone Wars, was how could they set up a spinoff. The people involved in it from a production standpoint are all Star Wars animated people.
Yeah. I mean, Dave Filoni alone is, you know, that's, you know, it's going to be good just because he's involved.
That's definitely a huge plus, you know, but people from the Clone Wars, Rebels, and Resistance are all involved, as well as people from The Mandalorian. So this is definitely something that's getting a lot of focus and attention from the core Star Wars TV group. So I don't really have any concerns other than I just don't really know anything about those characters.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then moving on, we'll switch gears to DC. So a couple of things. We have our new lead in the CW's Batwoman. After Ruby Rose has stepped down, they were going to replace her with a new version of Batwoman. The character's name is going to be Ryan Wilder. So this is a different new version of somebody wearing the Batwoman cowl. And the actor who will be playing this role is Javicia Leslie. And she will be taking over here in season 2. And this is a statement from her from Entertainment Weekly. Quote, I am extremely I am extremely proud to be the first black actress to play the iconic role of Batwoman on television. And as a bisexual woman, I am honored to join this groundbreaking show, which has been such a trailblazer for the LGBTQ plus community. End quote. So this is cool. We now have our actor. So they moved that along pretty quickly, unless they had her in mind already for something on the CW. Thoughts, initial reactions, guys.
I don't know her from anything, so same. I'm hoping that she's good. You know, the name Ryan is always a strong, powerful name and associated with strong and powerful people. So I'm sure the character is going to be great. I did read that her character is basically the exact opposite of Kate Kane in terms of personality, which actually makes me a little more excited for this show because I could not get behind the character the way she was portrayed. So yeah, I may give it a second chance if it gets good reviews. I don't know. I've kind of backed off all the CW shows this season, but, you know, we'll see. I'm hopeful.
I completely agree. I don't know too much about that actress, but she seems very excited and thrilled to do this. So I'm behind people that have fervor. You totally...
You guys both are struggling tonight. Good thing you don't have to really talk very well for a podcast. You
know? Yeah, exactly. It doesn't matter. Anyway, that's fine.
Nice work, Rachel.
You're good.
Thanks, guys.
So far is going great.
You can jump back in when you collect your thoughts. To Ryan's point about this character being different, what?
Nothing.
Okay. Ryan's point about this being different from Kate Kane, Ryan Wilder, according to the official character description, is likable, messy, and a little goofy and untamed. She's actually had years as a drug runner, dodging the Gotham City Police Department, and she lives in her van with her plant, which...
Down by the river.
I don't know if that's like a hint that Poison Ivy is going to somehow show up at some point, which, I mean, I'd be all down for that.
More lesbians.
So I like this line. A girl who would steal milk for an alley cat and could also kill you with her bare hands. That's pretty cool. Ryan is the most dangerous type of fighter, highly skilled and wildly undisciplined.
They do always say that about me.
That's true. They do.
Was that? Oh, we're talking about... I'm just confused. There's so many Ryans.
So many. And, you know, none of us are familiar with her, Javicia, but she's from God Friend and Me, The Family Business, MacGyver, and Always a Bridesmaid. She's other shows that she's been a part of.
And this Batwoman is not a character in the comics, right? She's a new character just for the show?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a brand new character.
That'll be interesting.
And they wanted to make it really clear. So Caroline Dries, who is the showrunner, made it very clear that Kate Kane is not dead. They're not killing off Kate Kane, specifically because she wanted to avoid the, quote, bury your gaze trope. And so the disappearance of Kate Kane will be a central mystery in season two. How they'll wrap that up, maybe Ruby Rose shows up for a cameo or something along those lines to help them solidify the story. Who knows? But she is not dead, at least yet.
Maybe they'll That's have great. A CGI Ruby Rose.
I don't know if the CW can afford that.
They could do King Shark. I mean,
yes, that is true. They did King Shark. That is absolutely right. Anything else on Batwoman before we move on?
I'm good.
Okay, let's talk Batman. So we had officially announced this week, Warner Brothers, along with HBO Max, will be debuting a brand new Batman Universe show that will focus on, you guessed it, the Gotham City Police Department.
What all of us have wanted.
I know, that's never happened before. We've never had a show like this, guys.
To be fair, you guys have never watched a show like this, I'll say.
I watched 6 episodes of Gotham, thank you very much.
Out of 5 seasons, yeah.
I watched the first season.
So this show will take place in continuity with The Batman, which is the Robert Pattinson film. And this all exists in its own universe, separate from the DCEU at this time. I want to stress that strongly because I anticipate that Pattinson's Batman will at some point merge with the rest of the DCEU, whether that's Flashpoint or something else. Not a whole lot to really say about this. It's going to focus on the Gotham Police Department. We're going to be seeing Commissioner Gordon, it's going to be a darker, grittier, more serious adaptation of basically what Gotham was trying to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of all we really know about it at this particular point. Jeffrey Wright will be reprising his role. He's playing Commissioner Gordon in the Batman, so he will also play Commissioner Gordon here. So he's the Coulson, I guess, of this Batman universe.
So he's going to die 5 times and come back throughout the course of the movie and shows?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, it is comic book stuff, right? So, you know, weirder things have happened. I mean, obviously, this is not like the world's most exciting comic book news, right? If they were going to make a new DC TV show, I don't think a Gotham City Police Department show would be high up on any of our lists. But does anybody have a positive spin on this?
I mean, so when Gotham got first announced, I was excited about that. And I did enjoy the show, though I thought it could be more. This show being on a streaming service could be more like, you know, something like Titans or Doom Patrol. And I think they can do a lot more with that. But also it's exciting because, you know, if Pattinson is a good Batman, then we get an extension of that universe and we get to see a lot more of that Gotham. And, you know, right on paper, it might not be that exciting. But, you know, if that Gotham in that movie is handled really well, then we'll be clamoring for new content, right? We want to see more things about that. And, you know, this is a good way to do it. I mean, it kind of sucks that everything that they can come out with is basically surrounding the Gotham City Police Department. You can only hear Commissioner Gordon yelling GCPD like 100 times before it gets a little old. But I think there's some potential there. I want it to be good, you know, but who knows? And I mean, it being on a big streaming service like HBO, we could get cameos from Pattinson. You know, that's not so outlandish. And it's got an established Batman in universe. Gotham, the problem with that was, you know, they had an 8-year-old kid that was, you know, supposed to be Batman growing up, right? And nobody cared about Gordon. They just wanted to see Batman. And so the show had to kind of change focus. But with this, I mean, they haven't said when it takes place, but I assume that it's post-Batman or like during Batman's reign. So that's a big plus. They all know about Batman. It's not like they have to hide this or like make these villains, you know, kids so that they're not a way older than Batman. I don't know. I think that there's a lot more potential there. It's what probably Gotham should have been in the first place. But we'll see. It might suck. Who knows?
Ray, any thoughts you want to add to that?
Well, this is not the show I've been asking for. Honestly, I would love to see an Arkham Asylum show feature the doctors. Like, you feature some of the lesser known villains who have very interesting arcs, like Calendar Man. And you make it dark and twisted and kind of a more mental thriller than anything else. I want to compare it to Brian Fuller's Hannibal, because you get crime in there, but it really just messes with your head more than anything. And I think that would be more interesting to see, but we'll see. Like, I have learned a long time ago not to completely pass judgment before I see something.
And that's fair. That's totally fair. We've all guessed wrong before about different things. And I'm with both of you guys. I agree that I think an Asylum show would be really freaking cool and have a ton of potential.
I know. I have great ideas.
At the same time, I do think that this show does have the opportunity to do Gotham right. By having Batman already exist as an adult, you can have these other bad guys without any problems. And I think that was one of the big hiccups for Gotham, at least for me and people who, you know, who cared about such things. So that's going to be a show that's coming up. Anything else you guys want to add to that before we move on to our final news item?
If that Asylum show comes out, I want just
royalties.
Royalties?
I want money.
That's fair. All right. Well, so our last news article is kind of a somber one. Grant Imahara passed away today at the age of just 49 from a brain aneurysm.
He passed away yesterday.
Was it yesterday? I apologize. Yeah. Yesterday. And this really bums me out. I really liked him. I've been watching him since the very early days of him on Mythbusters, and he was in a fan production for Star Trek called Star Trek Continues. And he does tons of robotic work. He's worked on the Star Wars films.
He was the one that redid all the R2-D2s for the prequels and updated their electronics and everything. So he had a pretty big role, and he was the primary driver for all the R2-D2s in the prequels.
Yeah, and he...
That's pretty huge.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Absolutely. He was pretty beloved in the Star Trek fan community. He did lots of cosplay stuff and would go to conventions and things like that. And so he just always seemed like a really cool person. Incredibly, bright and talented. And so it's just really sad. It's a sad situation and very sudden. And so I just wanted to... bring this up, make sure that people were made aware of it, and that's it. I don't know if there's anything you guys would like to add to that.
No, I mean, I first saw him in BattleBots and later in Mythbusters, and he was at Dragon Con one year when I was there. I didn't get to meet him, but I got to walk by him when he was going to the elevator once, so that was cool. But yeah, he's everything I've read about him in the cosplay community and the bot community has been that he's just a wonderful human being, and I've never heard anybody say a negative thing about him. So it's always a tragedy when somebody who's an idol for so many people, and in our case, we're all makers, we like to make stuff, so he's one of the best makers that was out there and the most inspiring one. So yeah, it's difficult, and my thoughts are with his family and friends out there. That's a terrible thing. Brain aneurysms are scary as shit. They can happen to anybody anytime, and you don't see it coming, so it's tough.
Mm-hmm. Ray, anything else you'd like to add?
No, actually, I have surprisingly never really seen any of his work. I never watched Mythbusters, and so his passing actually made me look more into his life and his career, and he just seems like a really kick-ass kind of dude, and dying so young, so tragically, so unexpectedly is incredibly unfair to him and his family. So, my grievances go out to them, and I hope they're able to, move on at their own pace and in peace.
Mm-hmm. Well said, well said. Of course, Kelly Preston, she passed away this week as well. She was battling cancer and lost that battle. That, of course, is very sad as well. And that's why we moved up our review here of Sky High, because she plays Jetstream in Sky High. So we'll be talking about that here after the break. But that is all that we have for news. So before we take a quick break, is there anything else you guys would like to touch on?
I just want to throw it out there that Ghostbusters Afterlife had a big leak for the entire plot. I mean, we don't know how true it is, obviously, because the movie hasn't come out yet, but it seems like it's probably true. So if you don't like that kind of thing, then just be very wary of where you're going on the internet for the next 6 months.
Six months, yeah.
Or however long it is till the movie comes out, it's still a long ways off, so it's frustrating. But
yeah, I can definitely understand that. And more movies are going to get delayed here. California just shut down all of its movie theaters again, and there are rumors that Tenet will be pushed again. That seems to be like the first film, right? Whenever Tenet comes out is when the theaters will be reopening, essentially. Mm-hmm. So I don't expect that to be happening in August based on everything that I've been reading. So I imagine we'll see a lot of delays, and we're going to try our best to keep track of what that stuff is when things finally open back up. All right, so we're going to go ahead and take a short break, and when we get back, we will be discussing Sky High on its 15th anniversary.
Woot woot.
All right, and we are back to talk Sky High. 15 years later, the 2005 flick, $35 million budget, brought in 86 and a third million worldwide. So not an amazing haul, but it certainly isn't a complete and total bomb. This was actually my first viewing of the film. I had never seen it before, but you guys both have, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
how, just kind of in a general sense, you know, spoiler warnings, right, for a 15-year-old film, how did it hold up for you guys? Did it feel relatively the same, better, worse? And when was the last time you saw it? Let's add that in as well.
I don't actually remember when the last time I watched it was. It's been a while. I didn't see it in theaters or anything. I was a little too old, I think, for this movie to go see it in theaters. But I think I saw it on TV, like cable TV, a year or two after it came out. And I'd watched it several times since then, but nothing probably in the last 8 years or so. And I'd say, yeah, most of it held up. The CG was worse than I remembered in a lot of spots. And there was a couple spots where the writing was not great. And you could tell that even the most seasoned actors on the set struggled with it a little bit. But yeah, I think overall it held up. And I'm pretty sure based on the time period that this was like Shark Boy and Lava Girl competition. I never saw those, but this, I can't imagine them being better than this movie.
Well, yeah, you're right. The Adventures of Shark Boy and Lava Girl 3D came out in 2005. So there you go.
Yeah.
Ray, what about you?
Same with Ryan. I was late teens at that point, and so I didn't go see this movie in theaters. I immediately watched it like as soon as it came out on home video because I thought it looked really cute. And I do agree that the writing from start to finish is pretty bad. The movie is very paint by numbers with not a lot of innovation. So what really sells it for me is that some of these actors are just absolutely crushing it. And they are delivering these lines so well that, you know, I just don't know if anybody else could have done it, or they're really like seeing the humor in it. But I think the problem with the film ultimately is that while the actors thought it could be like elevated superhero satire, the movie wasn't marketed that way. And I think the director went in thinking he was shooting the superhero Harry Potter. So
it definitely seemed like they were trying to set something like that up.
Right.
Interesting.
What about you, Derek? Your first feeling?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I'm pretty much on par with you guys. The cast is ridiculous. Like, the cast is wonderful in this movie. You've got, you know, Kurt Russell and Kelly Preston, Danielle Panabaker, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Bruce Campbell, Linda Carter, Jim Rash, Dave Foley, and even Patrick Warburton is the voice of Royal Payne. Like, just a great cast across the board. And they all seem to at least be trying really hard, and they seem to enjoy themselves, you know? I like some of the visuals. I think, you know, the costumes for the Commander and Jetstream are really fun. Things like
that. You did forget about Cloris Leachman in that cast, too.
I did. Right. Yes. The nurse. She's wonderful in it, too.
I didn't even remember she was in it, honestly. I was watching this and Marcy was like, oh my gosh, Cloris Leachman. Mm-hmm. Like, yep. Wow. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the story, though, is so tropey and so easy to follow that, like, 10-15 minutes in, you know more or less what the rest of the movie is.
But was it in 2005?
I mean, it's hard for me to go back and know for sure, but like,
I think so. I'm pretty sure when I watched it in 2005, 2006, I knew exactly how it was going to play out. I didn't know how it was going to get there, but I knew that it was going to end where it ended.
Because, like, at the end of the day, like, yeah, they're superheroes and all that, but it's really a rom-com at the end of the day, right? Where the best friend is in love, but they don't know it, and then this new hot chick shows up, but she's bad news. Like, I feel like that story's been done 1,000 times, you know?
True.
And they did it in a unique way by putting the superhero kind of skin on top of it all, and I think that certainly makes it more entertaining, you know? But it was just I was hoping to be surprised at things, and I just wasn't.
Apart from the cameos and the actors that show up,
right? Yeah, I mean, obviously they were really fun fun to see those. I mean, like when Farva's the bus driver, I mean, right. It's just like, it's a fun little thing. I think, you know, it has a lot of the problems that your like high school, you know, drama comedies have. You've got the bullies and they're very easy to pick out. They're very stereotypical, you know, two-dimensional bullies, and they're at a superhero school. So why are there bullies at a superhero school?
Well, why are there villains at a superhero school?
Well, but she's hiding herself as the villain, though. These guys are straight up giving people swirlies at a superhero academy.
It's a high school.
But are these guys really being trained to be superheroes? Like, that just seems like a massive flaw in the education system.
I mean, are the wizards in Harry Potter trained to be good wizards?
Ooh.
There's a difference. The word wizard is neither good nor bad, but superhero.
Well, it's implied that they're training them to be good, though. I mean, it's not like they're training them to be shitty, you know, killer wizards.
You know, we don't know that considering how messed up Rowling is at this point.
That's true.
She could have had nefarious plans from the beginning.
I'm sure she'll tweet about how they were training evil wizards there too, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll say to your point, Derek, something that, first of all, if for me, the adult actors on this rewatch carried the movie for me. The kid actors, for the most part, were pretty forgettable, or you could have inserted anybody else in there and it would have been fine, except Mary Elizabeth Winstead, but I'm pretty sure she was basically an adult at this point when this movie came out. I don't know. I feel like she was older than the rest of the cast. But
she was 21 at the time.
Was she? Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
The ages actually work out. So they're all older than they should be, right? They're all playing down, but they are the same, the correct age distance freshman, and because she's a senior.
Sure.
If that makes sense.
That makes sense. So. The other thing, to your point about everything being predictable and tropey, like, on this rewatch, having now done 200 episodes of the show, and now I can't go into a movie without a cynical eye, every single character was wearing like the most representative colors for their personality and
or their power set.
Or their power set. You know, you got Will Stronghold is wearing red, white, and blue, just like his parents, right? The whole movie, different outfits, but it's always red, white, and blue. The tree chick is always wearing green, always. And then she's so over the top hippie. Like, they do everything except say she's a vegan, you know? And they might have done that at some point, and I just missed it.
I think they do.
They said that she's vegetarian.
Okay, well, there you go. Yeah. The glowing guy always wears neon yellow, right? Like, the War and Peace, come on. And he's only wearing black and red. Like, it was just everything about the characters was so one-dimensional. Other than the adults. I mean, even some of them were one-dimensional. But I think Kurt Russell, like, brought so much to the commander that they didn't even need or want. They probably didn't even write it into the movie, but just the way he is, he brought so much more to that role. I don't know. The adults definitely carry it.
The adults were great. The fact that two of the teachers, well, the main two that we see are former Kids in the Hall.
Oh yeah.
Like, they played off of each other so well. And they delivered their lines just incredibly. I don't know how many times, like, if anybody steps on my foot, I say it just like Medulla.
And honestly, the prosthetics for Medulla were really good. Like, I was looking for seams and stuff and like flaws in that makeup, but it was actually really good and held up the whole time. And the way he could move his head was very natural still too. It didn't seem like he was wearing heavy prosthetic. So kudos to whoever was in charge of that. I'm sure they're watching.
Well, right. And while the Commander and Jetstream's costumes were cheesy, I actually thought they looked pretty good for what they were going for.
Oh, yeah. They were very well built.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In 2005, it was a different era of superhero costuming, right? We didn't have, you know, a lot of the movies that we have now. So, yeah, they were pretty great.
Most of the costumes back then in 2005 or earlier, they, like, we had the X-Men, which was complete leather. We had Spider-Man, which was a textured spandex. So the fact that we got like this really cool, comfy, breathable pleather outfit that they were wearing, it just looked amazing.
The fun fact about those, I did look it up. Kurt Russell's suit actually had a cooling system built into it, but Jetstream's did not, because hers was so skin tight they couldn't fit it in there.
Oh,
that tracks.
Yeah,
right. That tracks. Now there are some things I really like about this movie though, because like we reviewed X-Men recently on its 15th anniversary and I would absolutely watch Sky High again. And I have very little interest in ever watching X-Men again.
Well, cause in the end, Sky High is just a lot of fun. It's predictable. And like I said earlier, the tone is mismatching. I feel that like some people thought it was satire and other people didn't. So it's still a lot of fun. I still laugh every time I see it.
Yeah, and Boomer is great. Like,
oh yeah,
I'm pretty sure that they just, again, like Commander, I feel like a lot of the adults, they wanted to be like just basic one-dimensional characters because it's a kids movie, right? The kids are supposed to be the ones that the focus is on, but all the adults were much more complex characters and the kids were just boring. But Boomer was one of them. He was hilarious. Like the fact that he has a feud going back with the Commander and stuff like that. I mean, you can't hire Bruce Campbell and Kurt Russell and all these other Linda Carter and everybody else and expect, you know, that they're not going to steal the show. Of course, they're
yeah.
The kids in the hall guys. I don't know their names, but yeah, they're all great. It's.
And they do steal the show. I actually would much rather watch a sequel to see what the adults do and how they react to the kids around them. Like, yeah, the kids are going to save the day, but the adults are going to make all the best comments.
And I think it does go back to show like the quality of writing here, because the kids were all relatively young. A lot of these people didn't have a ton of experience acting, but the parents, they all did, right? These are all seasoned actors that we had already loved by the time this movie came out. So they could bring something to the writing that was from their experience, right? Like Kurt Russell already had his career. So he knew he could just kind of do whatever he wanted to do with this character and bring whatever life he wanted to it. The same with Bruce Campbell and all of these others. And like, look at the relationship between Commander and Jetstream. Like their just relationship is a really nice bright spot in this movie. Their chemistry is really good. Their banter is really good.
Don't really fight. They're just good parents and trying to do the best they can. It's true. Mm-hmm. You don't see that in movies very often, really.
And like when you see like, you know, because the Commander's a little cocky, right? He's a little egotistical because he's like the guy, but she's carrying him around and they go down the poles together. And, you know, they're both, you know, they take the lead at different times.
I think that's a really good point, because literally she is carrying him.
Yeah. Literally. Yeah.
I mean their power sets complement each other.
And I like that. Way. I really felt like the two of them could have just been a couple in real life. You know what I mean? It felt like a real relationship. And it just was nice. So that was like a really big bright spot. But again, it was the adults. The adults really had whatever their experience was prior to this, they were able to fill in all of those blanks. And I think that shows what good actors can do with not so great content.
Did you guys like the part where Kurt Russell says that there's going to be big trouble and then basically turns and looks at the camera and waits for everybody to go, ah, he said the thing.
Yeah, that was pretty great. Okay.
Yeah, it stood out to me too. I don't know if I remember catching that before, but he might as well have just like looked at the camera and winked at that point.
That was pretty great. So talking about Boomer for a minute, because, you know, I love Bruce Campbell so much.
Oh, we all do, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The placement scene where the kids have to show their powers, I love that idea so much. And I think it's so cool. Like, it is kind of like the Sorting Hat version in this universe, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it gives the kids a chance to show who they are and what they can do. And
it also makes you think of, like, Back to High School. If you had to be put on a stage in front of all your classmates and show a talent, like if you were forced to be in the talent show, you know, how would that make you feel? It gives you anxiety, or at least for me, it gives me anxiety thinking about if I had to do that, you know, it's terrible. But I do love that scene.
It's great.
I like to sing. And every once in a while, that fact would get out and people would immediately put me on the spot and be
Rachel,
like,
oh, you should sing something for us.
Yeah, exactly. Just like that. And it would always, you know, kind of bother me, but I have confidence in my talent, so I would usually end up doing it. The thing here is, like, you don't want to show off your powers unless you're going to be a hero. So
right, exactly.
Everybody else was like, nope, not going to do this. Except for Zach.
One of the first instances, though, of Danielle Pennebaker's character, like, being a little too over the top with the, like, peaceful hippie thing, and she's, you know, I only believe in using my powers for good, and I can't show them off. And it's like, okay, come on. Like, we get it.
Honestly, her character is very grating until she talks to him on the rooftop, and she gets better and better as it goes, but she is sitting there in their nook eating breakfast, and she's going to, and they offer her all this food, and she says, you know how my mom can talk to animals? Turns out they don't like to be eaten. Like, you didn't have to say it like that.
Get over yourself, Danielle Pennebaker.
Right? You did not have to say it like that. You didn't have to be a jerk.
That's what I'm saying. Caitlin Snow, get your shit together.
That goes back to the writing, though. You know, like, they wanted to prove that, like, this girl's already a super. She has a super-powered mother at a minimum. Right? And it's just clunky writing. And she's a kid. She was young. She was a teenager. And she was just trying to do what she could with those lines, I think, is really the problem.
Okay, maybe you guys can answer this question for me about her character.
Okay.
There's the scene where she's on the roof with Will. Mm-hmm. And she says something about when life hands you lemons or whatever, and then there's an apple. And she hands it to him, and she says, I can't make lemons for some reason. Is there a significance to that? Like, that? Why was that line there?
I think they just wanted to show that she still has stuff to learn as well. That she doesn't have complete control over her powers.
I guess. That just seemed like a big waste of time to do...
Well, I think it also was a reflection of that dichotomy where the movie doesn't know what it is, because that's a very parody line, right? That's something you would see in satire, where a character's powers are just like silly restrictions, you know?
Like, she can't make lemons.
Right. You know? And so, like, that's, for me, that was an example of that, where, like, that's a satirical line, but then later there's stuff that happens that makes you think they don't know it's a satire.
Okay. That makes me feel better that there, like, wasn't some hidden significance that I was missing.
No.
There's a couple spots in this movie like that, where I was like, there's a line here where they're specifically drawing attention to something. What, you know, and then it never pays off.
I mean, maybe the idea was, like, in the climactic fight with her and the girl who can duplicate herself, the cheerleader, maybe instead of doing a bunch of vines like Poison Ivy, she was going to do something with lemons, and they couldn't do it for some reason, you know? And she was like, oh, look, I can do lemons now, or whatever.
Oh, God.
But, like, this movie has a lot of those types of issues, though, where it's, like, it is satirical, but then at the same time, they're actually trying to make a really interesting point about classism and segregation and discrimination and that type of thing. And there's a really good underlying point there. And it's through the entire film, since it's the sidekicks that save the day, right? Hero support and all of that. But it's overshadowed by the silliness, by the satire, by the clunky writing.
Yeah.
It's like undercut, you know?
For sure.
No, I don't know. That's all I had on.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I was just nodding because, you know, it's good.
Yeah.
It made sense.
So what do you guys think about Mary Elizabeth Winstead's character, who, you know, she turns out to be the big bad for the whole movie? Gwen and Royal Pain. Do you think that worked, didn't work? What's your thought on that? I have some opinions.
I absolutely adore their little attempt at a twist. And I like that she wasn't just a bad guy, you know, that she wasn't just the kid of a bad guy, since they had already kind of had that with Warren. But she was the original bad guy, that her weapon backfired on her and Jim Rash had to be her dad.
Oh man. So here's my issue with it. And it has nothing to do with Mary at all. I think she's fine in this, but they didn't need to do the yearbook thing early on, because there could have been a cool twist here where not only is she Royal Pain, but she's the original Royal Pain. She's not even the daughter. It's the same person. Like, that could have been a twist, but because you see the yearbook early on and it just straight up looks like Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Yeah.
My brain just went to, oh, so it's just her then.
Yeah.
Right. And so when there's the big reveal, I'm like, well, yeah, you already showed me that. And it could have been a cool moment.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're right. It wasn't something that bothered me when I first watched this back, you know, years ago. But then rewatching it with my girlfriend, she was like, okay, obviously there's something happening here. You know, she was able to predict all this stuff before it happened super easily. You know, so it's, yeah, that, I think that was a little bit too much. They probably could have done without that first yearbook showing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like her plan is predicated on one thing that Will brings her down to the secret sanctum. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't do that in that moment, because the parents show up within like 20 minutes, right? If he doesn't do it right then, she has no plan. The whole thing falls through.
Absolutely. She never gets the pacifier back.
Right? And so like, that's such a tiny window. And Will is such a freaking idiot to let that happen after it's literally the one rule he has as a high school age child, can do whatever he wants except that one thing. That kind of just, you know, that's not good. That's not good narrative.
Yeah, when the commander first brings him down to the sanctum and like is outside the door, he's like, "Now remember, Will, no one comes into the sanctum. You can't ever bring anyone to the sanctum." And he's just super heavy-handed with it. I leaned over to my girlfriend. I was like, "Don't worry, that definitely won't come up later." I mean, right, it's such a ridiculous.
Destroyed the cafeteria, and he was rewarded with an Xbox.
Right, and also his power levels are like so off. Like, so he's struggling to lift War and Peace in that cafeteria.
Yes.
Like, it shows him, like, he's, like, wobbly with it and everything. But then by the end of the movie, he can literally, like, fly and hold up an island full of people.
And well, there's some issues with that, too. Because he catches it on the roof of a house.
Now, right.
Forget how strong he is for a minute.
What about the roof?
There's still weight involved. The roof isn't that strong.
Right. I was thinking the same thing. I was like, man, that is a super roof there. Yeah.
So that doesn't really work. And like, I think, you know, of course we don't know a whole lot about this universe. Maybe it's just the way it works that a child gets the exact same powers as their parent. Maybe that's the case, but it just seemed way too simple and convenient for him to just have the exact same carbon copy powers as his two parents.
Agreed. Especially when they're early on, they're like, "Well, I'm sure he has super strength." And she's like, "Oh, well, I hope he can fly." And they're, you know, they're fighting, not really fighting, but, you know, they're both telling how great it would be if he had one of those powers. Mm-hmm. And then why not just give him both? You know, come on. Get out of here.
Because they had to have him try and save the day at the end of the thing, right? Like, that's the thing. Like, it's all just a little too telegraphed. You know, it's a little too tropey. I do really like Royal Pain's powers, though. The idea of a technopath is something that's so rarely actually used and touched on in any comic booky superhero anything.
Honestly, aside from Cyborg, who was given these powers, really, I have only ever seen this once before, and that was in Heroes. The little boy could do it.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah. He would, like, he figured it out. He would talk to credit card machines and telephones, and it was really cool. He still didn't, like, build stuff. He could communicate with it just by touching it. So,
yeah, I think you don't usually see the technopaths that, like, have powers to build stuff. You just see mm-hmm. smart people inventing their stuff, like Tony Stark, right?
Right.
You know, that's about the closest as you usually see. Or even Batman when he makes his gadgets or whatever, or Lucius, you know, that's the closest you really get to a mainstream technopath. But yeah, that was cool to see. She could just like wave her hand and then shit all came together to turn into whatever she wanted.
And it's kind of a shame, like this movie's 15 years old now and nobody else has decided to try and make a character like that. Seems like a huge missed opportunity considering how much technology is just everywhere all the time in our lives.
It's true. Maybe they think that character like that would be too powerful because of all the technology that's in our lives.
Maybe. Yeah, that's fair. That's a good point. So is there any one power set in that you see in the movie that you really would have wanted, like something that really stuck out to you as cool?
Oh, I've always wanted the plant thing. Always. Between Poison Ivy and this character, like I've always wanted to help make things grow, to control them, to, you know, just feel at home around them.
I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm kind of boring. I'd take the Will Stronghold flying and super strength powers because there's a lot you can do with that. I mean, the plant stuff is cool too. I mean, that's definitely up there. But you know, I like Superman, and you know, that's basically Superman powers. He's such a versatile character that can do so many things, and with powers like that, you know, that can be very handy.
Yeah.
Unsurprisingly, for people who know me, I would take the technopath thing in a second. That sounds like the coolest freaking
power. And if we all work together, we'd be like the Justice League.
Yeah.
Be our own Trinity.
So what else? What else can we touch on in this movie? Is there anything else that stands out to you, either good or bad?
I think it's a shame that it didn't get any sequels or a spinoff TV show, anything like that. It was one of those Disney movies that just got buried and a little forgotten. But going back and seeing the fighting of the tones throughout the whole thing, it doesn't surprise me. If it had gone the whole satire way, it could have been, you know, like a Zombieland or a Cabin in the Woods or something for the superhero genre. And we could have gotten like a bunch of sequels, a bunch of like, or at least a cult following behind it. And if it had gone a little bit more super serious, then yeah, we could have probably gotten like 6 or 7 sequels.
Honestly, I think this would be like really good if they rebooted it as like a Disney Plus TV show or something like that. There's a lot more, like, you know, when you think about like a Harry Potter TV show, right? This is basically superhero Harry Potter. There's a lot of stories you could tell. You could do all these different powers, and they don't have to cost a lot of money. Something like that would make a ton of money. I'm pretty sure they'd do very well with that.
I mean, you could even make it a cartoon, and you know, sure, other than obviously the sad loss of Kelly Preston, you could bring back the entire cast.
Yeah.
Or follow a different family. Yeah. I mean, there's so much you can do in a universe like that. There's just the idea of it is very cool.
You know, having all of the teachers in the school, I mean, you could bring back all of those teachers and have them do these voices. You could even make it a couple of years later, you know, and maybe the kids we started with are now seniors.
And maybe you could do a bottle episode where we get to see Medulla's past or like, you know.
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah. So I just, you know, there's some, a lot of flexibility with that type of thing. And I think that, you know, cartoons are overlooked a lot now with, for kids shows. There's so many live action kids shows, but cartoons can be just as good. Sometimes better in many cases, you know? Yeah. So I guess, you know, just some final thoughts for me. I think it's really cute. I think it's really fun. I love this cast just completely, just inside and out. They're really, really great. And I think that it just wasn't quite sure what it was trying to be because of the clunky writing, and it just wasn't very original from a narrative standpoint. The skin on top of it, the superhero high school and all of that, I think was really brilliant.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. I think that's why Rachel and I both appreciate this movie.
Absolutely.
And now you.
And now me. Yeah, that's true.
Some fun facts about the movie for you guys. You want some fun facts?
Absolutely. Let's do this.
Okay. Cloris Leachman, who was the nurse, she was in the Wonder Woman TV series as Quinn and Queen Hippolyta, which was the mother of Wonder Woman.
That's amazing.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
Her character's name is Nurse Specs, by the way. And I
yeah, with X-ray
that.
Vision. Uh-huh. It's not on the nose at all.
So that good. Is the best application of X-ray vision I've ever seen. You know,
yeah, that was everybody cool.
Everybody talks about how they would see into bank vaults or be a complete perv, and here she is, you know, a medical professional, and I love it.
Another fun fact for you: Kurt Russell and Mary Elizabeth Winstead would portray the main protagonists in The Thing in 1982, as well as the prequel The Thing in 2011.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They also starred in Death Proof together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. There you go.
They had zero scenes together, but they were still in the same movie.
Well, they only have 2 scenes together, I guess 3 scenes together in this one, unless mm-hmm. you count the baby version of Kurt Russell.
Yeah, we didn't really talk about the ending where they all turn to babies.
I love it. I think it is so ridiculous and over the top. It's probably one of my favorite aspects of the movie because killing people is so cliche for big villains that turning them all into babies and raising a super villain army is hilarious.
My only problem with it is, in retrospect, like as a revenge plot, it's great. But the gun was designed before there was a need for the revenge, because it's what causes her to turn into a baby. So what was the original motivation for building that weapon?
Probably just to get, you know, Kurt Russell out of the way, because he was a dick.
Because he was a dick.
In high school, yeah, he was a dick.
Could be.
Also, can we just take a quick moment to appreciate that Jim Rash's character Stitches was the same age as Royal Payne, and at the tender age of 18 decided he was going to raise his boss as his daughter.
I mean,
way to step up, Jim Rash.
It's a little weird, yeah. But yeah.
He might be a villain, but he's a good dad.
As long as no one with six arms comes near his daughter.
I will say, as far as this movie was very telegraphed, the pacifier weapon did surprise me. It did not occur to me that it was going to turn people into babies. That was not something that crossed my mind. I assumed that it was going to either remove their powers or make them just like completely docile.
Well, with a name like the pacifier, that's probably what they wanted you to take right from it.
So I will say they did get me there. Fair is fair.
In a not so fun fact.
Oh boy.
Aww.
The beginning of the movie, Commander says he just saved the Superdome from collapsing. This movie was released 1 month before Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans and severely damaged the Superdome.
I didn't make that connection.
That isn't a fun fact.
But
I said it was a not so fun fact.
Yeah, that's
I prefaced it.
That is interesting timing.
This is a fun fact.
Oh, okay.
This is the second movie in which Kelly Preston plays a real estate agent. Do you guys know what the first one is?
No.
No guesses?
Oh, is it Jerry Maguire?
It is not Jerry Maguire.
Okay, then no, I don't know.
Derek?
Is it Twins?
It is not Twins.
It's not? It's
The Cat in the Hat.
Oh my god.
She's yeah, in that?
She's the mom in The Cat in the Hat.
I never
just
saw that.
Associate her with the mom.
Gotcha. I never saw Cat in the Hat.
Okay. Well, that's basically all my fun facts.
Those are fun facts. Okay.
I hope that's they were fun enough for you.
They were quite fun. Very, very fun.
Yeah. I do want to say that scene where Will Stronghold gets the first kiss on the cheek and then like jumps on the streetlight in the middle of the street, that was really bad looking.
Yeah, it was.
It looks like they took construction paper and like cut out the shape of a streetlight and Will Stronghold and just like spun it around in front of the film. It was so bad.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's definitely fair.
The CGI was definitely lacking. And like with Danielle Panabaker's trees and stuff, it was generally not great. Also, it was okay like in the final fight, when it like came up behind her and broke all the windows and she was fighting that like the chick that could make multiple copies of herself. Mm-hmm. But then like, you know, when she goes up on the roof to meet Will and stuff like that, it looked pretty bad. But it's a 2005 kids film, you know, I can't be too hard on it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair.
I do love the CGI on Multiple Girl, on Penny, because they used twins for it, and Maximum, there was six of her, and it looked just really good always. She never looked bad.
It's true.
There you go. We could talk about Warner Brothers pettiness for a second, if you guys would like. So Linda Carter plays Principal Powers. She should be president. And you know, she played Wonder Woman. That was kind of like her real big iconic role. Well, originally they were going to have her wear gold bracelets as kind of a nod to that character, but Warner Brothers told them no.
But they were okay with her saying, "I'm not Wonder Woman," when she walks out of the detention room.
I don't think they can stop that because it's a pop culture character that's just a reference.
But know? I mean, gold bracelets are just all kinds of people wear gold bracelets.
I think because it's a design choice.
Yeah.
That's kind of the key difference, I think.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I still don't really get it.
I mean, like I said, it's petty. It's definitely petty. It's not.
We all know Warner Brothers is never petty, so I don't believe it.
It's not a mature decision, you know? Because, like, look, you either got the reference and that would have been a cool little note, or it just would have been bracelets and nobody would have cared.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're coming in on our hour mark here. Anything else, guys, that you would like to touch on?
No.
Kurt Russell should do more kids movies.
Yeah, he should.
I agree.
He was at the Christmas one he did. That was a kids movie, and that was pretty good too. Claus or whatever.
Yeah,
it was called.
It was really good.
I enjoyed it though.
Fair enough. All right. Well, then we will wrap things up this week. So next week we will be looking at the live action Dick Tracy movie, celebrating 30 years of that movie. And
unless somebody else dies this weekend, then we might move it around again.
Well, let's hope that does not happen. Yeah. Anyway, yeah,
sorry.
Let's hope that doesn't happen.
Yes.
So one thing I just want to do. So we've had a Patreon for a really long time, and it's not really everybody's thing. It's totally cool. If you at all want to help support the show in any financial way, we do have a Ko-fi, which is Ko-fi. If you go to ko-fi.com/heroespodcasts, you can buy us a Ko-fi. Really, what that just means is you throw us a few bucks to help pay for domains, website hosting, equipment, paying for Zoom services for us to do our online recordings and live streams, all that kind of good stuff. So it can be a one-time thing. You can do it as often as you want, so there's no subscription requirements. So there's something that you could check out if you'd like. Otherwise, you can just subscribe to the show. We're on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, Spreaker, Podcast Addict. If you drop us a review, we will read your review on the show. You can review us on Apple Podcasts. You can review us on Podcast Addict. Wherever you do it, just go ahead and let us know, and we'll be sure to read your review. Ray, where can people find you if they'd like to talk to you about nerdy stuff?
I am at Siren Ray on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
And Ryan?
I am at the Star Trek Dude on Twitter. So tweet at me and tell me how much you love my opinions, and I'll make sure I reply to every single one personally.
It's true. He will.
As luck would have it, it's a strange coincidence. I'm also at the Star Trek Dude on Twitter and Facebook. It's super weird. But you can actually find all three of us in our Facebook group, our Screen Heroes Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/screenheroes. You can talk to us about movies, TV. We do polls. Today we had a lovely poll talking about some of the lyrics in the original Ninja Turtles cartoon theme song. We've got a tournament bracket going up right now about the live action X-Men films.
Rachel posts very thought-provoking things in there all the time. She has a very popular post today talking about musicals you'd want to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We post trailers and just tons of cool stuff. So come talk to us in there. It'd be a good time. Otherwise, you can find us at Screen Heroes Pod on Twitter or heroespodcasts.com and Heroes Podcast Network on Facebook. Thanks, everybody. We'll catch you next week.